following material was performed under extreme mental duress and lack of prescribed medication.
You know, there's a lot more to comedy than what you hear on the stage.
I like the idea of comedy at night. Rule number one, attack the audience verbally.
You know, my friends laughed when I started doing comedy, and nobody's laughing now.
I emptied my case. They didn't boo me or anything. It's just every time I came out from behind the case, another 10 people had left. Man, I was ready to hang myself. I'm not kidding, man. I measured the light cord in the room and everything.
It's The Green Room, a program by comics with comics where we talk about everything. And it's starting right now. Hey, everybody, you've made it once again. It's The Green Room. I'm Vilmos, your host. Thanks very much for listening, especially those of you new listeners that are coming to us from Stitcher. Stitcher.com, that's where you can get the Green Room on your smartphone, meaning BlackBerry, Android device, or iPhone. Damn it. Anyway, coming to us this week, he's going to be at Laughs in Tucson on the 22nd and 23rd. Ladies and gentlemen, the effervescent Ben Roy.
That's great. I got the qualities of Sprite. I like it.
I was telling you before we started that you're surprisingly there's nothing. Do you even have a Facebook account? You're like non-existent on the internet almost.
Yeah, I do have a Facebook, but it's personal. I don't have like a fan page or anything.
Yeah.
You know, I think too much of the time, and this was just my opinion, there are a lot of people it works for, but I think it's too easy when you put a bunch of your stuff on the internet for people to create an idea of who you are without seeing you, and you know, they see that one bit in 5-minute tape or whatever, or a quick bio about you, and they establish their own, you know, notions about who you are. I think being, for lack of a better word, mysterious or somewhat hidden from everything, and creating a chatter amongst the people who have seen you live is a much better way to do things until you reach a certain level.
Well, I'll go along with that, but what about the people that have seen you that want to keep up with you?
You got to come to shows.
All right.
You know, I mean, and that's, you know, I mean, that was, it hasn't worked against me yet. Now, I'm not saying I'm not going to need to do this real soon or what have you, just to keep, because I think as people grow and they're outside of your regular market, you know, you start building up a pretty regular fan base. I think, you know, when they're further away, they want to know when you're coming again so they can see you and whatnot. But for the time being, you know, I try to keep things word of mouth or through whatever the clubs do that, you know, that I'll be playing at.
Huh.
But that'll be changing soon. I mean, I know that it's something I got to work on.
I got to be honest with you. You seem to be running right against the grain of what conventional wisdom is. And by all accounts, or anybody that I've seen or talked to or whatever, you should really, it should be working against you, but it hasn't seemed to.
No, you know, and I think it, like I said, I'm not saying that it's, you know, something that everybody's done or whatever. It's the same reason, like, you know, I haven't done a CD. People are like, do you have a CD or a recording? No. Why? Because you burn that material. I mean, ultimately, the next time, I'm not going to do that right yet. You know, create some anticipation, and it's starting to work. I think a lot of, this is just my opinion, too. Nobody has the right answer. I think it's funny when they're like, conventional wisdom is just a funny idea to me. There's no right or wrong. There's 8 million paths to fame, you know.
You're exactly right. And I guess maybe indirectly I'm kind of alluding to that, that it seems to me like you're cutting your own path. And I wonder if other people are going to try to follow you down that and not have the success you've had.
Well, they may, and that's why, you know, don't follow anybody. You know, it's funny, it's like everybody saw the post that Stan Hope posted about all these boot camps that have popped up for comedians and things like that that are going around the country, and he's got his opinions on that, and they're, you know, I think they're accurate in a lot of ways. And maybe they're not. Maybe somebody gets something out of it. But the one thing that I did like that he said is that, you know, I mean, the best thing you can do is just get up on stage a lot. Have a lot of people see you. Create that buzz about you.
Yeah.
You know, find your own way of doing this. And I wish I could say that it was some part of some planned thing. It wasn't. It's just what I'm comfortable with. I don't feel like putting a bunch of my stuff out and then seeing that some, you know, and we can swear on this, right?
You can say whatever the fuck you
want. Yeah. That some asshole in St. Louis or like fucking Rhode Island or something is doing a near replica of what you're doing. And every comic knows that. You take that risk when you put your stuff on the internet and you're not on television. And you can't say, this was aired on that date, so I have proof that I did this before you. You know what I mean? And that's why you have to protect yourself, and I really do believe that.
So
this is, you know.
So you're kind of so your whole kind of take on that particular thing is you're protecting your material.
I'm protecting my material. I'm protecting that's the way I feel. Like, I'm not saying anybody shouldn't market. This is just me, and I'm not even saying my material is all that great to anybody else or that anybody else would want it, but it's mine and I enjoy it. And until I feel like I have the backing enough to copyright things, to really like promote myself, and there's a need to put all that energy and resource. A lot of times people build these huge elaborate websites and things like that, and they see no real benefit from it. There are thousands of comic websites, and there are a handful of big comics, you know what I mean?
Right.
But like I said, I'm not saying this is just what I chose to do. Who knows?
Well, no, that's right. Cool. And it's funny you would bring up Stanhope, because Stanhope's that way, in a sense. Stanhope does what he thinks is right for him.
Right.
And like him or not, you got to give him a lot of credit, because the choices that he's made for himself have worked out very well for him.
Yeah, he's the guy's amazing. You know, like, when I love reading interviews with him when he talks about television, why he hasn't done more television, you know, and he had that whole foray into Man Show and things like that. And you know, he said, like, I'm just not good on television. He realized that about himself, that just television is not his medium. And I thought he was great, but he, I guess, didn't think that about himself. But at least the interviews that I've read with him, I don't know if that's true in person or not, but he just found where he's comfortable and what makes a comfortable enough living for him and his. And, you know, and that's, you know, it's good enough. I think, I don't know that fame is something that would ever be good for me or healthy for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can understand that. Stanhope, just another, I was reading his, he wrote a blog on Giraldo, Greg Giraldo's passing. And it ended up being more of a commentary on his drug use and how he uses, you know, what he does. And at one point he says, I tell people when I do coke before I go on stage, just like a singer will tell them that he's battling a cold, so that they understand why I might be a little more erratic than usual.
Yeah. Great. The level of honesty that he's attained with himself and with who he is, I think that's the one thing that I would say, that if anybody can, you know, that we as a people could replicate. There are a whole group of people like that, and those people are great, they're exemplary people that are so comfortable with themselves that, you know, take it or leave it. And if you don't like it, we're not going to be friends anyway. It's going to be hard to fake who I am. And I think I understand that. And that's, you know, I don't know. Anybody who knows me knows that that's, I don't know.
No, I know. Well, and that's one of the things that I like about you. I mean, we've never met personally, but, you know, in the one discussion we had before, I really got that from you. And I know a couple guys that know you that pretty much have told me the same thing. And I know you've done a couple festivals, and you really got into some good stuff early on. And I'm gonna read something I read from a website called The Comics Comic. And I'm sure you probably – do you even know that there's been crap written about you? Do you even care?
The Comics – it depends what it is. If it's about Montreal, I did see it. Somebody forwarded it to me.
No, this one's before Montreal. This was from Boston in 2006. And,
oh, I can only imagine.
And this is what he wrote. He wrote, you were the third up, apparently, in your round. Because he had an order of appearance. Yeah. Ben, and he called you Benjamin, which I wonder if you dislike that or not. But
no, I don't care. Whatever.
All right. It makes it sound like he was almost talking down about you. But is that the way they listed you?
No.
They listed you as Ben Roy?
As Benjamin. Well, that's my given name is Benjamin.
Well, I know that, but that's like, to me, I called you Ben. I know nobody I know calls you Benjamin. So for me, when somebody, it's like your mother saying you're in trouble, Benjamin.
No, but I think what it may have been is that when I signed the stuff for the festival, I signature everything as Benjamin Roy.
Oh, all right.
So that, yeah, so I don't think, I didn't take it like that.
Oh, okay. Anyway. Well, I was just wondering. But, you know what, because you got, sometimes you can read within between the lines and get some cool shit. Other times, like this, you try to read between the lines and there was nothing to read. So,
yeah.
All right, anyway, so it says Benjamin Roy. Drinking, jail, sex, in that order. It's funny, yes, but too raw for this type of contest.
That's funny, because if you know the Boston Comedy Festival, it's like, and anybody who knows it knows that for some reason Boston just has this feeling of being, like there's that contest, to me, for a city that is so mouthy and, you know, sarcastic, has this contest that is notoriously known for being conservative and kind of clean. And,
right.
And, you know, same type of thing. I went, I did my set. I'm not going to fucking change what I do. Like, why would I do that? Because it's going to be a pain in the ass for me to replicate that later on. Like, if I go further, you know, and having to do longer sets and having to do more clean. I have about 4 minutes of clean material, and even that... that material has the word cunt in it. So, I mean, like, you know what I mean? So that's the funniest part about it. Like, how do I... my clean material isn't even clean. Last night was hilarious. Like, I had a show here, you know, and you get more conservative crowds, and they're uncomfortable at points, but you tell them, like, I'm not doing this to shock you. This is just my opinions. You're laughing at what I live with in my head, you know, like what I think about.
Well, that's...
That's why I love comedy. That's my favorite part about it.
Well, and so then we fast forward. You did Montreal New Faces this summer.
Yep.
Which is fantastic. I mean, that's like starting in the World Series or whatever. You know, that's a huge step. And the one thing that I noticed, which I thought was for me it was interesting, and again, maybe I'm the reading between the line guys when I shouldn't, but the two pictures that I saw you, I saw one from, again, the Comics Comic, not because I searched that site, but it's what came up on the search engines. He's got great indexing. And the other one was actually from from Shecky Magazine. And the Shecky Magazine one, and both of them, you're flying high with the tats, because you got sleeves. Both of them, well, the one's kind of, it's a sleeve too, but it's not.
Yeah, it's more old school style. Yeah.
Yeah. So generally, a guy that's going to Montreal is, I think, wants to try to be as appealing to everyone, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I was really like the fact that you're showing the tattoos anyway. And to me, that was exactly what you said. You're like, this is who I am. If you're going to look at me, then you need to look at all of me. I'm not going to have this thing I'm hiding around some other, that you're going to have to find out about some other time.
Right. Well, and the other part of it is that, and what people from the Northeast know, that Montreal is hot as balls in July and humid as fuck. And if people think that I'm going to walk around and wear a sweater just so I can pander and coddle to their frailty and sensibilities and what they feel is right to put on television or whatever, they can eat my asshole, because I'm not going to do that. Like, it's not going to happen. Like, the fact of the matter is that if you're uncomfortable with tattoos that these days, I'm actually happy about it. I hate tattoos. Those who know me, I love tattooing. I think it's been whored out and bastardized by, like, Ed Hardy and all these morons who go out and just get these pre-planned, like, huge Japanese sleeves that, like, they're like 18 and they've never had a bad tattoo. They never sat in a trailer with a dude, this guy named Tattoo Mike. I was 17 years old in his trailer. I'm pretty sure I narrowly avoided Hep. Like, you know, I understand why people feel the way they do about tattoos, and honestly, I kind of like to keep them underground, and I wish they still had that, you know what I'm saying, that, like, that element. But on the other hand, the reality is a lot of people have them, and they're not putting people with them on. There's like 40% of the population or 30% now has tattoos between 25 and 40, and you rarely see people on TV with them.
Right.
And it's like, but yet you walk down the street, and it's because Hollywood and, you know, Viacom is selling us all this garbage about airbrushed people and these lives that none of us live and these jobs that none of us have. It's just garbage. Like, I'm going to be who I am. I am a person in this society, you know, and if you can't find a place for me in television, but you can find a place for Glee, then kiss my ass, you're not creative. You know what I mean? So.
Did anybody advise you to cover your arms?
No, not once. And I think that, like, up there, I think the attitudes are changing towards it now. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people with a lot of tattoos, and I think I'm just, you know, my tattoos that I have are from a time when I think I wanted to do something else. You know, I was into skating, I was big into skateboarding, and I was big into traveling around and playing in my band. I wanted to be a rock star, you know, like I just grew up around scum punkers and shitty, like, band kids in New England, and we just covered ourselves in crappy tattoos, and that was what, you know, I don't know.
Well, that's pretty cool, though. I mean, I give you a lot of credit for pretty much saying, fuck you guys if you don't like this. Go fuck yourself. I'm doing this anyway.
When you're, you know, like, Montreal being what it is and being, it used to be a whole different thing. I think it's changed. Its emphasis has changed. You know, you used to leave Montreal and people would have development deals and things like that. Now I think it's more a showcase, and it's a good opportunity for new comics to pick up representation and have people see you and create a buzz about yourself. And that's what it was good for. People, you know, starting to generate a name for myself and getting to work bigger rooms and bigger names and things like that. So.
Yeah, I was just listening to Bill Burr's podcast last week with Greg Fitzsimmons.
Yep.
And Greg was saying how when he did, they were just talking about this, and he said when he did Montreal, after he said, I guess he did extremely well during his set. He was in New Faces. They actually formed a line after he got off stage. He said he walked out of that place with a six-figure development deal, representation, a slot on USA television show, and I think he said either HBO or Comedy Central special.
Yeah, I walked out with a gift bag, a laminate, and a bill for taxi cab rides. You know, like, it's. But on the other hand, I will say this. It is the most fun I've had in a while. I met a lot of great people. I opened a lot of doors for myself. I think what they're wanting now, and I don't blame them, because, you know, they put out a lot of garbage television with the development deals and things like that. There was a lot of shit that they just took and put out there that nobody watched. It was just garbage. You know, I mean, like, you can't just go up there and see somebody's 8-minute set and be like, we're going to mold a whole television show after you. You know, I mean, when you're not fun to watch. Greg is hilarious, too. I think Greg Fitzsimmons is a really funny guy.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
You know, so I'm not necessarily speaking of him or anything, but, I mean, there was definitely stuff that came out where you were like, this wasn't really well planned. I get why they're doing it the way they are now. They're kind of saying, you know, they're putting it out there. You get your spot. You're in front of all these people. You create a buzz. I've got to sit down, take meetings and things like that, you know, do all that, whatever. But I more like the fact that I'm just getting to perform more. You know, I like writing and being on stage. I think any comic does. So.
Right. That's, no. And that's what I was going to say. They were talking the same thing. It's now, it's more of a showcase. It's more of a week. I think they actually said it's a great week to hang. So
yeah, you know, I will say that was my favorite part. And I, you know, any comic strives to feel like they're accepted a little bit by their peers as being, you know, recognized for, you know, maybe being talented or whatever. People like what you do, and it was cool to be up there to work with people and do shows with people that you think are really funny, and you know, to have them view you as, you know, one of their own, like, you know, look at you and say, hey, you've obviously worked hard to get here.
Yeah. So, well, did you know there was quite a few guys out of Last Comic Standing that were in the new faces?
Like 11, you know, like a lot of the people, and they were all great. Like Fortune Feimster is really funny. She is so nice. You know, Mike Vecchione was on my night, and he's a really funny guy. You know, there were so many people from that show, and you're like, it was myself. There was a kid, Jesse Case, who is hilarious that not many people know about. I didn't think before then.
Yeah.
That were kind of virtual unknowns. Nobody really knew us. You know, we had no representation. We were just scouted and found, and
yeah,
that was cool. So,
well, here's what they wrote in timeout at timeout.com, and it was about Just for Laughs. It said two of the top performers in this year's annual Young Talent Showcase were New York comics Andy Haynes and Mike Vecchione, and you should catch Denver's Ben Roy and Austin's Jesse Case. Also hilarious when they come visit our town.
Yeah, I mean, timeout New York, like writing about it, I mean. You know, I mean, that's good stuff to put in press. And, you know, now when I go to New York, I get spots and, you know, I'm working clubs and, you know, going to L.A. and stuff like that. I've used to act in high school. I like acting. I've wanted to get back into it. This is a good in for it. And I met a good group of people to work. It's a good agency. I'm happy with it. And, you know, I mean, as long as I'm comfortable in my interests. My life is where I want it to be. I'm staying in Denver right now, which is where I'm happy.
Uh-huh.
My son is happy. My wife is happier, you know. So.
Yeah, so not that I'm not asking who, you don't have to say that, but did you end up getting representation?
Yeah, I picked up an agent, but I held off on management just for right now. Just personally, it's a, I don't know, you know, that's much more of like a,
that's a commitment right there.
Yeah, it's a kind of a personal decision, and you want to make the decision to go with people that you feel comfortable about and not take it lightly, because I don't want to end up down the road, you know, hating the person and we don't get along or whatever it is.
Absolutely.
Thousands of horror stories about that. So, but yeah, that part's cool. So I, you know, to have somebody on your side making sure that you can get up on stage and, you know, get on television, you know, getting credits and things like that is a good thing. So
are you trying to work, so what path are you taking? I know when I talked to you the other day, and I know you said there's things you can't talk about, but you're doing some writing.
Yep.
That's all I'll say on something.
Yeah, yeah. Myself and Adam Caton Holland, who I think was on.
Yeah, he was on a little bit ago. Are we talking Wrist Deep Productions here? Because I was
going to ask
how that's going.
No. You know, like, that whole thing, that's so funny that it, you know, like, that Wrist Deep name just got put as something so that people knew that it was the four of us doing shows, who the comics were, and then it just became, you know, like, Los Comicos. We had some good comics on it, and it got some good press from the Denver Post and the Westward. But other than that, I mean, I think Wrist Deep is about as much as a group as, you know, us. We're not trying to, everybody's still promoting their own careers and wanting to do that, but Adam and I have written together for a while. We're writing a pilot for a TV show, and
oh, nice.
And, you know, we're just, this whole thing, that's the one thing, and you know, every comic out there knows, and that's the hardest. You got to keep busy in eight different avenues, or, you know, you're not gonna, if you're not doing stand-up, you know, try writing stuff, short stories, maybe write a book, you know, or try to write a treatment for a movie you'd like to see, you know, keep your ideas out there. And so, but yeah, so doing that and, just trying to get into acting, you know, and doing a little more with that. So
is that kind of which way you're going to go? Instead of heading east to New York, you want to head to LA?
I don't know. We'll see how that goes. New York is, I like New York to vibe better because of the number of stages. You can work so much each night. But on the other hand, I think sometimes that's frustrating too, because there's so much work in the city. It's for a lot of people, and it's so expensive, it's hard to leave a lot. So, you know, right now what I've told them is I'm just feeling like I'm in New York again the week after next, after I get back from last. Then, you know, I'm going to L.A. in November. I'm on like a six-week rotation, kind of just bouncing back and forth. And then I'll be out there for pilot season. I'm going to stay out in L.A. for 3 or 4 weeks in late January. So.
Oh, is that right? So you're going to do some auditioning?
Yeah. You know, I mean, you got to do that. And not only that, it's getting up on stage. You know, the Hollywood Improv, that was great. And, you know, just getting to do shows at Caroline's. That's where I'm going to be next month. I'm going to be seeing some shows there for a buddy of mine. And that's, you know, doing stuff like that is fun. So getting the opportunity.
And did these doors open predominantly through Montreal? Is that when that stuff cracked open?
Yeah, largely. You know, but working the comedy works and working rooms, you know, Colorado is so fortunate. That room is so great. It's got such a vibe to it. And then you have all these other little clubs around it that are always full of people. You know what I mean? So there's not a shortage here in Denver to work and to work at clubs. And, you know, there's just, it's such a small scene that if you're good, you know, you get quite a bit of stage time. So
yeah.
I like it here.
So now you now that you have an agent, you're going to start going to a lot of different areas, I imagine. So you're going to be going, I don't consider, even though it is in the South, but I don't consider, or the Southwest, I don't consider Laughs really that Southern, you know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, whatever, Stardome in Birmingham, stuff in Texas. You haven't been down that way, right?
I'm so nervous, like, for those types of rooms. Like,
exactly.
You know, I'm just, I don't know. You know what I want? I want politics to get away from where it is now, because I want the American redneck back. I want my friends that are rednecks back, this, like, rift driven in between us. I'm, like, scared to go down there, even though, like, I grew up in the deep south of the far north, as Conan O'Brien called Maine. You know, I mean, that's what it is. And I grew up around rednecks, and now I feel, like, separate, because, like, my views have just been, like, played as part of the game in politics, and now there's like this animosity, and it feels awkward. Like, I, you know, just because I believe one side, you know, doesn't mean that I'm not willing to listen to your side or whatever. But now everybody's so defensive when you get on stage with an opinion, like you're trying to sell us liberal agenda or whatever. And it's not. It's just my opinion.
Right.
I'm not saying it's right. You don't have to listen to it. You know. So I kind of want. I wish people could just get back to.
Well, I'm just kind of curious as far as it goes. There's a point in time where you can hedge your direction no matter what, right?
Yep.
A great example of that was Mitch Hedberg, because I worked with Mitch back in the day. In fact, he was the first guy I ever got paid to work with. He was like, my first paid show was with Mitch. And I knew him a little bit. But the thing about Mitch was he would go on stage and he did his thing. And it didn't matter if he ate shit more back then than he was successful. This was before he had been on Letterman and all that other stuff. I mean, I think I met him right after he did Aspen for the first time, which back then was big, too. I mean, it's still big now, but I think it was bigger back then. I think Aspen's watered down over the years a little.
Yeah.
Anyway, he stuck to his guns. It didn't matter where he was. He did Mitch Hedberg's stuff. But then there's other guys that take the tack of, look, I'll make slight adjustments. When I'm in front of a crowd and, you know, I can tell they're not digging me, I'm going to make a few adjustments to kind of bring them in. I'm not saying watering it down. I'm saying maybe you skip a joke or whatever. Which way do you think you're going to go? Or have you already decided?
No, I mean, I'll go in and I'll do what I do. You know, I mean, and that's the thing. If I don't do well in a certain market, but I'm not going to adjust to a. I mean, I think you adjust anyway naturally because it's what you feel comfortable with. But I don't think a crowd would ever notice or anything. You know, I liken it to when you do Denver and then you go down to Colorado Springs to work, where the climate is much different. My tone is still the same. I'm still saying the same exact things. I'm not going to say something different just because if they don't like it, that's their right. You know, I'm not going to, and it's my right as a performer and what I've done to stand up there and do what I do. And if they don't like it, they don't have to. They don't have to come to another show. They can ask them for their money back or whatever. So I just can't see myself doing that. And maybe they find, you know, maybe it comes up, hey, you're not going to be a good fit for this because you're probably going to be burned at the stake or, you know, whatever, stoned to death. I think funny's funny. And I think if you're the right type of personality and you're the right type of person, you can get up there and do well. You don't do well in every room. You're not going to. And to me, if you do, you're not doing the job right. That's my opinion.
Really? You know,
go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. So you think that if you're, how do I put this, alienating the crowd, so to speak, that's not right either. I don't even know how to say it. It's just that, see, to me, I'm the opposite. I'm not completely the opposite of that thinking, but I also think that there's something to be said for a guy that can adjust, for somebody that can do comedy in front of a bunch of conservative people or a bunch of uber liberals. You know, I mean, to me, there's an art to that as well.
Yeah, I would argue that when this is, and once again, my opinion, I'm not saying it's right.
No, I know, and that's what we're talking is our opinion.
Yeah, my opinion on it is, as an art form, you're expressing yourself, your opinions. And not everybody has the same opinions or views. There's no way. I mean, half the world is split on everything. So you're not going to please everybody with your opinions or your views. Now, there's a vast difference. I'm talking about from the point of view where I tend to write more satirical type material. Now, if you're just, there are plenty of comics who are, like Jim Gaffigan's a prime example, or even Brian Regan. There's an art form to what they do, and they are universal. They're universally funny. That's just their sense of humor, but that's what they do. My opinion, and I'm talking about satire-type comedy, you're not going to make everybody happy. It's an opinion. You know, it's you're doing it right when some of the people don't agree with you, but I think the real art form in it is getting people who don't agree with you to laugh at your material, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like, you don't want everybody to agree with your opinion or, you know, you're doing it wrong in that respect. I think when you leave and the people say, I don't really agree with you, but you're funny as hell, that's a great compliment. You don't have to. I'm not asking you to, you know. But there are people who just were had so much conviction, so much, they were so deep-rooted in what they believe, and they're so vitriolic about how they say it or whatever that it crowds off, they walk them. To me, they're doing it right. They're doing the art form right. They're doing it the way they want to do it. That's, I guess, what I mean.
I understand what you're saying, and I'm not going to say that's exactly what I've always said, and I go for, personally, me,
yeah.
I try to be a little bit of a dick on stage. Because I want, at the end of the show, I want him to go, you know what? I'd never have that guy over for dinner, but he was sure funny. So
yeah, I got an email last night after a show. Anytime you get an email, you know, because you get a lot of people who send you stuff on Facebook. At least I do. I get, like, stuff from people like, you're an asshole or whatever. the one that I got last night was this woman wrote that I was rude, obnoxious, whatever. I forgot exactly how she worded it, but she was like, but I loved every minute of it. And I have a whole bit about how I hate dogs and I think they're irresponsible and owning dogs and things like that. And she, when I looked at her photos, and this is a very scathing thing about dog owners, she has, like, all of her photos are her with her dogs.
Uh-huh.
Like, they're all, like, her in the mountains with her dogs, and she's, like, wrote at the bottom, like, I can't wait to see you again, and blah, blah, blah. And I may not have changed her mind, but she laughed at my, you know, whatever. I made my opinion somewhat entertaining to the other side, so.
Sure. There's nothing wrong with that. And I agree with what you're saying as far as that goes. It's just that, to me, I don't know if I would have trouble if watching people walk out.
I mean, I don't know that I've seen some, you know, like, I've seen a lot of comics who do it well. Like, one of the more popular ones is, like, Sean Rouse, who not many people know, but is, you know, I've watched that guy walk a lot of people when I was opening for him in Denver, and amazingly offensive, great material, well written. It's offensive, but it's clever, and people screaming at the stage, like, he would literally excite that kind of reaction from people. That's what he does. He's staying true to himself. He's staying true to his art form. He's defending his art. You know, he's not going to cower down and be like, you know what, I'll tone it down for you. This is his creation, you know. Defend it. That's all I say is just, you're not doing it right if you're trying to please somebody. If it happens that that's what you do with your art, everybody loves it, it's goofy, it's funny, great, you're being true to yourself, you know.
Yeah.
But if it's not, you know, and they leave, that's fine. Stick to it. Be yourself. You know, I mean, not everybody's going to like you, or maybe everybody does. You have the lucky luxury of being one of those people who is universal. I don't know.
Well, no, and there's nothing wrong with what you're saying. I'm not even being critical. Most people, you know, a lot of comics, as you know, and they get into comedy because they're self-loathing, low self-esteem, you know, nobody liked us when we were kids. You know what I'm saying? We had all these things that made us feel like we were pounded down into nothing. And we lost all our self-respect. And then here now, we've found something that allows us to kind of fit in somewhat. I mean, it's not, you don't ever, I mean, I don't know, I can't speak for you because I have no idea what you feel inside. But I know for me, I'm driven to the stage by a lot of my experiences when I was much younger, where I really felt like I was just the fly on the wall. Nobody ever noticed me. And I'll be very open about that. That was just what happened to me, and this is one of the byproducts. But it almost sounds to me like that wasn't you. It sounds to me like you.
Most certainly it was. I mean,
really?
I was definitely, I mean, I was much more, it's funny, like much more sensitive, you know, like I was just kind of a, like then my friends, you know, growing up in Maine, like, you know, everybody is, they're kind of hardworking. They're from Catholic, big Catholic families. You know, it's very like lots of alcoholism. I happen to be lucky. I had great parents who, you know, because they raised me sensitive and to view like other people as equal. You know, there was not a spot of like racism in my family. My family hated that shit. You know, they were like everybody's equal. You know, and very like, I don't know, like just well adjusted. Successful people, and growing up myself in an environment with a bunch of people who may not have been that, who grew up in rough households, who had shitty childhoods and came from less than I did, I think, because I came from, you know, I would say middle class, like very average family around people who were, you know, didn't have a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
That made it really, that was beaten out of me, I think, you know, like I got picked on a lot. I was fat for a while. It took me a long time to realize and the right group of people to hang out with that you can only be walked on if you lay down. And and so I just, you know, through them, I, you know, change of friends, and I learned my sense of humor from my friends. You know, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like a group of kids that we skated and we drank and flopped in awkward apartments and houses, and you know, you set up for yourself.
But usually that beat down, we'll call it, you know, get you to the point where you just, it somehow or another bothers you when you're not accepted still, you know, not completely, and I'm over most of that, but I still have that little piece left, you know, that every once in a while rears its ugly head. And that's why I think a lot of comics want to be able to work, not necessarily be liked. Don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. But what I'm saying is a comic wants acceptance, and acceptance is through the laughter. And
yeah.
The laughter, and you don't want to see people, a lot of guys, I think, don't want to see people leaving the room because they consider that a failure. And on your end, you're saying that's not a failure to me. That means I'm stroking it on the right cylinder here. That's
yeah,
what I
know,
want to do.
I think my idea, what I want is I want to be happy, and being happy to me is not working, you know, in an environment. I'm not so much doing this to be recognized by everybody in the crowd as being whatever. I want to say what I want to say. I want to say that in the end, when I stop doing this, hopefully, that I, you know, that this was, that people looked at me and they said, you know what, he did a lot of shit wrong, and I have, and I can honestly admit that, but, you know, whatever, I did it. It was my thing, and I don't want to, I look at it and I'm like, I want to just be happy, and sometimes I think to myself, like, at the end of the day, I still come back, my wife is still here, you know, my son still likes me, I think, I hope, I don't know, he's kind of edging away from that sometimes. I think that, like, my big thing is just, I've watched so many comics worried about, like, pining over their set and worrying about, like, whether or not they're going to be accepted. Are they going to be hated? We all do that. But they do it so much to the point where they rub the wound raw. Like, they literally, just rub anything good out of it. They overthink it and what have you. When they're genuinely funny people, you know, if you just went out there and said, I'm just going to be myself and whatever happens, happens. I love, like, you know, like Dave Chappelle, people like that. I look up, I admire people who walked away because it was the right thing to do, you know?
Yeah.
I like that idea that, you know what, like, this is more about being happy, you know?
Sure. So is the overall goal for you to stay a comic the whole time, or do you want to move into acting?
Yeah, I'd like to act. I'd like to write. I like writing. But really, stand up. You know, if I could continue doing stand up, a lot of people don't like the solitary type feeling to stand up, being on the road and whatever. And it's frustrating to me with my panic attacks and stuff sometimes. But for the most part, I really enjoy. I like being on stage. I like that I'm by myself. I like telling stories, things like that. So for the time being, just, you know, working on the acting thing and doing stand up. And then whatever comes out of that comes out of that.
Well, cool. Well, I tell you what, from my perspective, you're a fascinating guy to talk to. And,
well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. You're yourself. You're doing great with this. I hope this keeps the ball rolling. You know, I mean, I hope I listen to stuff like this. So I hope that it continues rolling for you.
Well, it can, because it doesn't require much funding. You know, it's not like I got to get rich on this. This is truly kind of what I do here is a little bit of a labor of love for me, because I'm a naturally inquisitive guy, and the opportunity for me to ask people that are, you know, dude, you do things that are way outside of my comfort zone. You know, just talking to you, I there are things that you do that I could never do. And a lot of times, just acting as an observer, like if I was watching you work on stage, I could appreciate that for what it is, but I would never truly really understand kind of what you were thinking. So for the opportunity for me to talk to you, to, you know, get what's going on in your head, that enriches me. So,
yeah,
you know, that's why I'm grateful. And, you know, I don't know. I got a lot of people that listen to the thing, and I hope they enjoy it too. But the truth is, you know, this is just a very selfish thing that I do for me.
Nah, yeah, being selfish, that we've tainted that word. Unfortunately, you know, being selfish has crossed into also being lumped together with, you know, arrogance and those two sometimes can look very similar, arrogant type behavior and selfish behavior. And I don't think selfish is – I've never felt that that's a bad thing. I feel like if people were a little more selfish, you know, they thought more about what makes them happy and doing what makes them happy, then maybe shit wouldn't be as fucked up as it is now. There's so much worrying and finger-pointing right now about what other people need to do. You know what? Get your own shit straight. Like, and do what – puts a smile on your face, and maybe – we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. I don't see being selfish as being an all bad thing, you know?
No.
We're all assholes. You know?
Well, yeah. So, anyway, I appreciate you being on the show. And folks that are listening, you can be selfish and go make yourself laugh by going to see. See, this is my segue into the end.
Good sequitur.
How about that? You can go see Ben. He's going to be at Laughs. Definitely, he's going to be there 22nd and 23rd. He's definitely somebody you got to see. And you know what? I'm even going to say this. I got a feeling in a couple years, it's going to be hard to see you in a regular club. You're just one of these guys that's moving so fast that you ought to have a fucking jet trail following you. You're doing so well. Good for you, too.
Well, thanks, man. I really appreciate that, and thanks for having me on.
No, cool, man. So, folks, you go see Ben, 22nd, 23rd. They do two shows at Laughs, one at 8 and one at 10:30. You can get your tickets online at www.laughstucson.com. Or if you're old-fashioned, and that's okay, call them on the phone. It's 520-323-8669. And like I tell you guys, listen to your comedy live. That's the way it's supposed to be done. If you can't make it to see Ben this weekend, go to a comedy club near you. Thanks for listening.